Hey friends, welcome to Girls Night, where we work through life's biggest decisions and transitions together. I'm your host, Stephanie Mae Wilson, and I'm so glad you're here. Let's get started. I'm so excited about today's episode. Today, you're going to be hearing the advice I wish I would have had when I was single. Today's episode is going to look a little different than usual, because if you've been around for our Girls Night community for a while, you know that generally it's girls only around here, with the occasional exception of my husband, Carl. He gets to come every once in a while. Well, today we are breaking that rule, but I promise it is for a very good reason. Our guest for today's episode is my longtime friend, Ryan Weckenman. Ryan and I met back in college when we were part of the same campus ministry. And today, he's the teaching pastor at a great church called Red Rocks Austin. He also recently wrote an incredible book called Single Today, Conquer Yesterday's Regrets, Ditch Tomorrow's Worries, and Thrive Right Where You Are. In this episode, Ryan is sharing his journey of being an unmarried pastor for over a decade. He has such a unique perspective on this topic, and that's why I just knew we had to have him on. You guys, Ryan is the real deal. He is funny and he's kind and he's super wise. He always has been. And that's why I'm just so excited for you to get to meet him and hear from him today. In this episode, he talks us through some of the biggest struggles that we all face when we're single. Things like, how do I respond to a relative who keeps nagging me about my relationship status? Or how do I stop comparing my timeline to the other people in my life? Can I experience intimacy even as a single person? Is there something wrong with me for wanting to be single? Is there something wrong with me because I'm not married yet? And that's just the beginning. Friend, if you're a single person in your 20s or 30s, I hope this episode brings you so much encouragement and that it reminds you that you're not alone and also that there's nothing wrong with you. Okay, you guys ready? Let's jump into my conversation with Ryan. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. As many of you know, I recently wrote a book, and while it was the most rewarding project of my career so far, it also came with a lot of hard work and long nights. And sometimes when things started to feel a little bit overwhelming, I needed to get a few things off my chest so I could clear my mind and keep the writing process flowing. And the thing that helped me so much to sort through those feelings was therapy. Now tell me if any of this sounds familiar. Maybe you're going through something really hard right now, a big loss or a gigantic life transition. Maybe you frequently feel anxious, depressed, overwhelmed, or just generally discouraged. Maybe you really, really, really want your life circumstances to change, but you don't know how to actually change them. Or maybe you're feeling stuck as you try to work through your past, navigate your present, or figure out your future. Friend, if you can relate to any of this, you're not alone. I've been there, and therapy has been the thing that has helped me more than anything else with all of this. In the last 10 years or so, I've learned that strength isn't proving I can do it on my own. It's knowing that I don't have to. I'm at my strongest when I have a full support system around me, and an essential part of my support system is therapy. Therapy can be absolutely life-changing, that is, if you can afford it and find a therapist you like and trust. But of course, this is easier said than done, and that's why I'm so excited to be partnering with this week's podcast sponsor. Our sponsor for today's episode is BetterHelp. BetterHelp is the easiest and most affordable way I've ever found to find a great therapist. It's entirely online and super easy to sign up. You can get started right away, and if you don't love the counselor you're paired with, switching is easy and it's free. If you're going through something hard in your relationships, or if you're in a funk you just can't shake, if you've been feeling anxious or depressed lately, or if you're feeling stressed and you need help balancing your everyday life and schedule, BetterHelp is an incredible resource for you. And I'm so thankful that they've given me a promo code that I can share with you to make it even easier to get started. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/friendship today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/friendship. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. Friends, springtime is finally here, but that also means allergy season is in full swing. I have always struggled with allergies, and I don't know about you, but I am especially allergic to cats. More on that in a second. Well, luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. The time that I use Claritin the absolute most is when I'm at my parents' house, my childhood home. They have this absolutely beautiful cat that they love and I like, except for the fact that he sheds so much. So that means that I'm basically sneezing from the second I arrive home to the second I leave, unless I take Claritin. My dad has even started having it ready for me right when I walk in the door. Are you ready to live life as though you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. Claritin, thank you so much for sponsoring our girls' night. We love having you. Okay, friends, I am like ridiculously excited about our episode today. I'm so excited. We have a person here with us that I've actually been meaning to have on the show for a long time. Ryan, you don't know that, but it has been on my radar that we need to have you on the show for a long time. We haven't because you're a guy and this is girls' night and You need to know how big of a deal it is that you're at girls' night. You are the second guy ever to be invited to girls' night. So welcome and know that this is an honor that we are bestowing upon you.
Stephanie, I feel the honor complete. I feel so honored to be here. This is so fun. Thank you for having me. I cannot wait for this.
This is so fun. Okay, so Ryan, tell us first who you are, what you do, and a fun fact about yourself, and then we'll talk about how we know each other and how you got this coveted invitation to girls' night.
My name is Ryan. I live in Austin, Texas. I'm the teaching pastor at a church called Red Rocks Austin, which is a church that I helped plant 6 years ago with two of my best friends. And I recently wrote a book called Single Today. I've been a single pastor for over a decade now. Singleness has always been a space that is very interesting to me. It's a space that I feel very comfortable in, but I also have noticed along the way that it presents a whole lot of struggles for a whole lot of people, including me. And so I love sitting in that space with people and helping them navigate it and all of that. And so that's the short story of how we get there. But you and I's story goes way back. And so I'll let you ask. Oh, sorry. First, fun fact.
Fun fact.
I grew up playing in a very, very bad punk rock band called Chasing Rabbits for about 12 years. And my goodness, I tried so hard. Like I worked, Stephanie, I put my blood, sweat, and tears into that band. And it was awful. And so if anybody is here and you just feel like you've given it your all to something and it's not panning out, my goodness, I know that feeling so, so well.
That is amazing. I think I might have known that, although this probably is the first time I've ever heard you say it was bad.
It was bad. Yeah, we used to do that thing where we would just pretend like it was awesome because you have to. Like when you're insecure about something, you have two options. You either embrace it or you just double down on that thing and You pretend like it's the best thing in the world. And we used to do the former.
Yeah. I love that so much. I love that so much. You and I have known each other for a really long time.
Long time.
We've been friends since college. Mm-hmm. It was towards the end of college for me, because I'm like a couple years older than you. But we I my favorite so we were in a college ministry together that I know you guys have been around the show for a long time have heard about a ton. Ryan, did you work for the ministry?
I did. I was the summer intern. When we say the word work, it's very loose. Like, we were interns.
And you know, very, at least I was very unpaid. Like, entirely, fully unpaid. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you were like completely.
I was completely unpaid, yeah.
And even when we weren't interns, we were putting in like 10 to 20 hours. Like, I cared more about that ministry than I cared about classes.
Totally.
When I was in college.
Totally. You know? It was really good. So we became friends from being part of this ministry and working for this ministry. And my favorite thing about you, Ryan, was, I mean, we hung out a ton, especially right at the end of college for me. But you and I would always go on Jamba Juice dates. I don't know if you remember this. And we would just have the best conversations over Jamba Juice.
The best.
So good.
It was awesome. Who would have thought Jamba Juice? You know?
It was because at the time, like, everyone was going to coffee. Like, that's a whole, I mean, I'm sure that that's still like what you do in college ministry. Yeah, you go to coffee, but we were like, we have had enough of coffee.
We got to do something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've always been trend centers, Stephanie. I think that's the takeaway.
We've always been trend centers. man, this is so fun. Okay. Well, so Ryan, like I said, I have been wanting to have you on the show for a long time because singleness and dating is something that we've talked about, that I've been talking about in my, you know, corner of the internet for a long time. Yeah. And really, for me, that came out of when I started my blog and I started, you know, telling my stories and what I was learning and what God was doing in me and around me. And I started getting emails from the women who were reading, which was so cool. And the biggest question that they were asking me, the biggest, you know, kind of topic was around singleness and dating. And I feel like I tend to learn lessons the hard way. And so there were so many things that I just, like, you know, ran into full steam ahead and then got my heart broken, or tried this and it totally didn't work. Or, you know, I learned a lot the hard way. And so I was so happy to get to pass along the things that I'd learned. And then also I saw a lot of bad advice out there, specifically in the church, about singleness and dating. And so I was like, I cannot let this go on. Like, this is, everyone is going to be like, unhappy or in terrible relationships forever if they follow this advice. So I must stand in the way. and so we've been talking about it for a long time. And so I have always, you know, it's always been in the back of my head. I want to have Ryan on the show to talk about what you know and what you've learned, because you have just a really beautiful perspective on this. And it's really fun because our books are like almost book twins. Your book comes out a week before mine. So we've been texting behind the scenes going, this is so scary. Are you scared? Yes, so I'm scared too. Yeah.
Oh, it's the best. Yeah, you're like my accountability partner when it comes to continuing to move forward, even when you're feeling very insecure about what you've created. But I will say, let me say this. If somebody had walked up to our table at Jamba Juice all those years ago and said, hey, you both are going to put a book out a week apart from each other in 2024. We would have just laughed at that person's face. Just very, very, I probably would have said something mean to him. You would have been sweet about it. isn't it so cool?
It's really
like
cool.
How the journey has just been so fun to get to this point.
Yeah. And so, really cool. It's really cool.
Yeah. And let me just say before, I know, we'll get into all of it. But so when it came time to find endorsements for my book, Single Today, you were the first name that popped in my mind. And you were, of course, gracious enough to read it and write a great endorsement. But I just love the way that you have discipled women through singleness over the years and shepherded them. I've really admired and been super thankful for and gracious for. So thank you.
Okay, well, and now I don't know how to recover from that. thank you. Well, okay. So Ryan, I want to hear about your book. And there are, like, I have so many questions for you. So let's dig in. The book is called Single Today, Conquer Yesterday's Regrets, Ditch Tomorrow's Worries, and Thrive Right Where You Are. Yeah. Tell us, more than telling us about the book, tell us your story when it comes to singleness and dating and relationships.
Yeah, it's a great question. So the moment that like really began this journey for me was a moment where I was sitting in my car on a Sunday night. I just preached at a young adults thing, and we shut down the church, and the whole parking lot was gone. And I was, everybody was out of the parking lot. I was the only one left, and I couldn't put my car in drive, and I couldn't move. And I kept asking the question, is there something wrong with me? And that is because for, I was a young pastor at the time, still a young pastor, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
But at the time, like the narrative that was surrounding me, at church, at seminary, at home was always like, hey, if you're single, especially if you're going to be a pastor, like if you're single, you better be getting married soon. And for me, that has never been a huge desire of mine. I was in a relationship when I was like 21 for a couple of months. I've been on a couple of dates since then. But especially in those early times, like I was really doing that because I felt like that's what I was supposed to be doing. But whenever I was honest enough with myself, it always just felt super unfair that it would have been unfair for me to continue any sort of like pursuing somebody, because the honest answer was I've just always been really content being by myself. And that's a beautiful thing. The hard part for me was all the other voices coming at me and all of the narratives coming my way that like, that's not okay. And so back in that parking lot on that Sunday night, I'm sitting there going, I feel like there's something wrong with me. I don't even know what that means. I don't know how to experience these emotions. I don't know how to feel these things that I'm feeling. I just feel stuck. And so that's sort of where the book begins. And then I try to take you on my journey of doing things like going to see a counselor, you know, and having honest conversations with people that I love, and all of the work that I've put in to the singleness journey. And so to answer your question in a very roundabout way, the book came from my heart to sit with other people in that singleness space, because my goodness, the amount of insecurities that it brings up, like the amount of fears that it brings up, the amount of those, is there something wrong with me moments. Like if you're listening to this, maybe it's because you keep falling in and out of love and keep repeating like the same patterns over and over and over again and keep ending up in the same place. Or maybe it's because you want to be in a relationship, but you just can't seem to meet anybody, you know, or get asked on a date or whatever it is. All of that brings up this question, is there something wrong with me? And so I really wanted to write from that place as sort of the foundation. Does that make sense?
Totally. Totally. I think that's the question that everyone's asking all the time about everything. It's just, is there something wrong with me?
So it doesn't change when you get married, Stephanie?
No,
is that what you're saying?
No, it doesn't. You know, it's funny because I don't know how, I might not be able to put this, like explain this the way that I want to, but I think that we have this idea that everything's going to change when we get married. And there were times in my life where I was hoping that was true. You know, we look at marriage like this fix. You know, if I can just get married, then I won't be lonely anymore, or I won't worry that something's wrong with me, or I won't whatever. But then also, and this really gets to the heart of like my book, I have always had all these ideas of what life has to be like, or like, well, you do this and this is just how it goes. And so I, for a while there, especially as it got closer, became really afraid of marriage. Because I was like, am I going to wake up the day after my wedding as like a totally like the married version of myself? And like, I don't know who she is. I don't want to be her. And it was so cool to wake up the day after my wedding and I was just me. I was like, it was just, everything was just the same. And that's so great because like everything that you were before this giant life change, like you still are. Also, it's hard in the fact that it doesn't actually fix everything. There's now just another person kind of in the mess with you if you have things that you haven't really worked through. And
yeah, right.
So anyway, but yeah, no, it's all the same. It's all the same over here.
I love it. And there's something so beautiful about that, right?
Yeah.
Is all of these things that we think are going to fix us really don't. But then also a lot of the things that we end up worrying about, you get there and you're like, oh yeah, that was not that big of a deal.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's just so funny how much energy we waste, I feel like, in the future, worrying about the future, trying to figure out what's going to happen there. And for me, singleness has been this massive invitation into just being present today, being present where I'm at, present in the interview that you're in, instead of thinking about the friend you have to help move tonight, you know, or what, that's my personal example, or whatever it is, like, be present where you are right now. Yeah. Right.
There's, you know, I've probably talked to like a bazillion single women in the last decade. That's like an exact figure there.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have you cite your sources for that?
Yeah. Stephanie? I'll find it for you.
Hey, by the way, I would imagine this will make you laugh. Doing the notes at the end of a book. Was that so intimidating for you?
Yeah. And like, yes. And I asked for so much help with it because like my sweet editor was like, do you want me to like, I can help you with some of these if you just give me the links. And I'm like, great. Because I've never known how to cite my sources. I've never known how to format it. I'm always going to put a comma on the wrong spot. Yeah, it's awful.
And thanks to like school, I always felt like I was going to get like arrested or something, you know, if like a comma was in the wrong place.
Yes. And it's even worse in publishing because you're like, I'm stealing someone's property. Like, yeah.
I know. Oh, goodness. Okay, I interrupted you. You said bazillion.
A bazillion, yes. And you know, I would say, the majority of the women that I talk to who are single do want to be in a relationship.
Yeah.
There also are a lot of women that I've talked to that are like, I genuinely don't want to be married. And so I guess my question is, as you've, like, tell me more about that. Yeah. I want women who do want to be in a relationship to get to hear your perspective. But then also I want women who aren't looking for that to know that they're not alone. Like when you were asking, is there something wrong with me? Like, is there something wrong with you?
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot wrong with
you. No, the answer's no. The answer.
But there's something really freeing about just realizing that, right? And letting it go. And what you're alluding to, I think, what I hear is really like the heart of this book, realizing that this question of like role relationship or not relationship, there's actually, if you're just listening to this, I'm using my hands a lot. there's so much going on beneath the surface there that I think the actual conversation and the actual invitation is learning how to just be content with what you have today, wherever you're at today. If you are somebody listening to this and you really want to be in a relationship, I think that this book, you're going to find this book incredibly helpful because it's really a story about how to be content today. And if you're listening to this going, yes, thank you. Like, I don't really want to be in a relationship and I don't ever hear anybody say that. Yeah. I got you. You're also going to find this book very humorous, I think. Because what I'm trying to do is take relationship status off of the pedestal that we put it on. And I think when we can do that, it's kind of like having an overinflated balloon that you know is just going to pop. I go to a lot of kids' birthday parties these days because all my friends have young kids and there's always balloons and all the kids go crazy. And also it's just, you just know that one of them is going to pop very soon and then there's going to be a lot of tears.
Yes.
It happens every time, right? Because when a balloon is too overinflated, it's like it's going to pop and it's going to cause some sort of chaos. And I feel like the relationship world, the dating world, my goodness, especially in the church, is like an overinflated balloon where it's like there's like this anxiety to it. And what I'm trying to do is like, hey, let's take some of the air out of this balloon. Let's all take a deep breath. Let's remember that this was always supposed to be fun. And of course, like it's vulnerable and there's rejection and betrayal and all, like there's all that hurt. We get that. But at the end of the day, like this was supposed to be and is supposed to be something that we enjoy doing as we all try to navigate this world together as broken humans, right? Yeah. And so that's really all I'm trying to do. And so I would say to either one of those girls, great. Now, beneath that, like who do you want to be? And who are you? And what does your life look like today? And whether or not somebody else comes along to partner with you in that, great. Or if not, great. But deeper than that, and I know this is a message that you're really passionate about as well. Like, who are you, right? That's what we're trying to get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
As you've unpacked this, well, let's go here first. You are 30-something. Mm-hmm. You have been in the church forever, which we've already talked about puts a huge premium on relationships and specifically marriage and young. Like, so there's not the, in some parts of the country and the world, I feel like, you know, you can be whatever age and like, you don't start to feel the pressure for a while. In the church, it's like, out the womb. Like you are immediately like, I am praying for you to like learn how to pee in a potty. And I'm also praying for your future husband.
Yeah. Do we have a date set for that wedding yet?
Truly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I'm looking around at the other kids in your preschool and I've eliminated you and I'm looking at you. Yeah. So you've been in the thick of this for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
What are some of the things that you, that people like say to you about or questions that they ask you?
Well, the first funny part is how often the God card gets used here is it's almost always.
Did God tell Sharon at church who you're going to marry?
Right.
Yeah.
Like I have a good friend named Ethan who he once said in a sermon, if Ryan said yes to every person who said God told them to marry him, like he would be the world's biggest polygamist, right? Like it's, which is, you know him. So you know the sarcasm that he operates with. But it's pointing out to a deeper reality that oftentimes feelings and emotions and hormones sound a lot and feel a lot like God to us as we're trying to like navigate this, right? And so oftentimes what happens is it's like, hey, I heard from God and you need to meet so-and-so. Like you need to meet my niece or my neighbor or, and it's always from very well-meaning people, right? But I think the first thing I would say is you have to learn how to parse that out and have a filter for yourself where you go, okay, this person thinks that they heard from God that I'm supposed to meet this person. Great. Obviously, they care about me. They care about this other person. Obviously, they see some compatibility there. That's all great. What we're not going to do is go, oh, yep, God wants it to happen. And so now all of a sudden, I don't have free will and I don't have a say in this. Like, no, like get that thinking out. You heard that from another very imperfect person who has their own stuff, right? And so that's number one. And when I think as soon as I saw that, like it just became funny to me. So I hope like this conversation, what we just, that little back and forth just frees some people up. Because as soon as you like see the joke, you can just start calling it out. And just in the back of your mind, you don't have to confront them. Like that wasn't the Lord, you know, but just in the back of your mind, just go, okay, yeah, we'll see. You know, how about this? God will tell me too. You know, this is going to be a two-way street, and I'm not going to just like do something because I feel like I'm being forced into it, like as if that's how a loving God would operate, right? So
I feel like it's worth saying that's true for everything. Like that's, it is so wonderful to have other people in our corners, but it really is so often that other people seem to have this clearer vision for our lives than we do. And so, and it's really scary when someone comes up to you and says, hey, I think like God told me that you should take this job, or God told me that you're going to have 15 kids, or God told me whatever. And you're like, ah, okay. Like they may have heard a word from the Lord. If that is the case, there will be a lot more words. But also, like, they may just have a gut feeling, or may have a great neighbor, or may want a lot of grandkids, or may whatever. And so, like, every time someone says, God told me to tell you, not all of those are from God.
Yeah, that's so good. That's so good, Stephanie. The question is, like, what else is going on there? Like, what else is underneath that thing that they just told me? And actually, if you learn how to do this and learn how to laugh about it, it actually will reveal to you the ways that you can be helping them and counseling them and being a good friend to them. Because oftentimes when people use the God language, they're revealing some of their own deepest needs or deepest wounds or deepest insecurities. And so again, don't say that to them. but just in the back of your mind go, oh, this is really like good information for me. This is a good way that I can know how to be praying for them. I can know how to be there, how to be in their corner, how to be checking in on them. Because they are revealing to you something that's very vulnerable to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. What other things do you... So, I mean, I feel like some of the women listening are like, well, it'd be great if someone at church said, hey, I know a great guy that I'd like to introduce you to. But like, that's not happening. What they're hearing is like more invasive questions or more, I guess, more questions, less offers to help. So like, do you get those too?
Oh, yeah. Almost always. Almost always. Yeah, it's somebody told me when I was like 23, it was like 11 years ago. Somebody said, you know, I'd really like to see you married this time next year. And that was like the line. The conversation starter and ender. And I was just sitting there like, oh, okay. I don't know. What do I do with that? What am I supposed to do with that? And so I get that one a lot. I will say this, it's gotten easier as I've gotten older. I feel like people are just giving up on me or whatever. I don't know. But especially through the 20s, it was always like it was the low hanging fruit and the jokes with friends, and it was like the narrative that I felt like I was just secondhand smoking is that I should be getting married, or I should be at least pursuing it, and I'm not. And so that's where the there must be something wrong with me narrative comes from. What I would love to hear from you, like over the years of being with and counseling so many girls, what are some of those things that tend to pop up for a lot of your listeners?
I think it's a lot of like, so are you seeing anyone special? There's a lot of that. And then there's a lot of, you know, when I was your age, and that's really, you know, for so many of us, I think it happens a lot. I think when we look at our moms or like women who have gone before us, that we kind of know their timeline. I will never forget the first wedding I ever went to was my cousin's wedding, and I was 18 and he was 25. And it was like weddings are so fun. So it was so much fun. It was so wonderful to see them, you know, in love and getting married. And I remember standing on the side of the dance floor going, okay, I'm going to get married when I'm 25. Because like he was 25. And so I'm like, okay, like I internalized his timeline and thought, okay, well, so like that's when I'm going to get married. And it was like, I was nowhere close at 25. And also, what business do I have as an 18-year-old deciding the timelines that like nothing about that makes sense. And my, like, what does my cousin's life have anything to do with mine? Like there's no, that comes from nowhere. But we do that with, you know, our moms. We do that with our aunts. We do that with our sisters. We do that with, I don't know. We don't know what this is supposed to look like. And so we look at someone else and kind of see the timeline that their life followed. And it's really hard when ours doesn't follow that same timeline. And I think probably the toughest thing is, you know, is the questions for sure. And it's always at family gatherings. Like it's always, actually, I want to pause here. What advice do you have for women who are sitting at like Thanksgiving and someone starts pressing them about their love life? Like, what do you
so good
say?
Yeah. That is, I was golfing with a friend of mine a few months ago. This was before the holidays. And he said, I'm not excited to go home for the holidays. And it wasn't because he didn't love his family. It's just because he knew the questions that were coming. As same questions that come every single year. It was always about love life and usually about the lack of a love life, right? The like Christmas table, the Thanksgiving table with extended family. I don't care like how much work you've done. It brings up insecurity for everybody, right? And so I feel that. I very much get that. What I've learned is the reason, one of the tricks that I've learned in my own mind is the reason I don't like historically being asked, are you seeing anyone special? Is because I feel like it becomes this this conversation cul-de-sac, which is a phrase that I've heard a few people use, and I really like it. It's like, you know, you're going down the road and then they throw the ball to you. Hey, Stephanie, are you seeing anybody? I'll use myself. Ryan, are you seeing anybody special? And in the back of my mind, I can see this cul-de-sac coming, like this dead stop coming, where I know the answer is going to have to be no. And then all of a sudden it's going to be like, can you pass the potatoes? You know, like awkward silence. And so what I've learned how to do is find ways to turn that cul-de-sac into a through street, to turn a conversation ender into a conversation starter. And when you get asked a question like that, like for me, and you'll have to tailor make this to your own life, but I go, no, I'm now going on my 10th year of being single as a pastor, which I know is unique and I know it's a little different, but it's actually created all sorts of interesting opportunities for me this year to sit with other single people and help them through what they're going through. And now all of a sudden, what I've done is I've responded to Uncle Joe's question with not a conversation ender of just no to a he all of a sudden has like 10 different questions that he can ask me. And it's like I'm hitting the ball back over the net to him. I'm mixing metaphors now. But all of a sudden, like we have a highway, right? Where we can just go and go and go and talk and talk and talk. And so it doesn't make it easier. And I don't mean for that to be cold comfort. More I want to say I'm with you and I feel it. And like solidarity all the way, because it's a hard thing. But learning how to like preemptively coming up with ways to turn those hard questions into conversation starters. Yeah. That just eases the tension a lot for me.
Because usually people aren't trying to, they are hurting you, but they're not meaning to. Like they're really trying to catch up with you. And you know, you said the phrase low hanging fruit earlier, like people don't know what to ask. And so it's like, well, you know, everyone else is doing this right now. So I might as well find out like, what are the kids doing these days? The kids are getting married. So.
Totally. Yeah. That's how we relate with each other.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I think that's really important, Stephanie, of learning to see that question as a question asked in love. That goes a long, long ways.
Yeah.
Even if like in the back of your mind, as that aunt is asking that question, go, it's because she loves me. It's because she loves me. It's because she loves me. And she's trying to relate.
Yeah.
Trying that out. And again, what we're both saying is it's not going to fix everything, but my goodness, it does make it a lot less uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. We, my nuclear family, my sister, my mom and my dad and I were, at Chipotle in the middle of Ohio, this one night because we were getting ready to go to my great aunt's funeral. And we just, like, I don't know why we picked Chipotle. Anyway, because why not? I digress.
Right.
So we're sitting there and going, we're about to see everyone in our extended family who we love, but that's our moment for our family where it's like, I'm going to have an answer about where I'm going to college or what my major is or what I'm doing after I graduate or who I'm seeing or if I'm pregnant. And like, I have all these other cousins who are probably doing all those things too, probably more impressively. And so like, what am I going to say? And this was the first time that I remember actually really talking to my family about this and hearing from my mom, like what questions she was afraid of being asked. And my dad's like, inevitably someone's going to ask if I'm retiring. And, you know, I just don't really want to get into the whole where I am with all of that. And at the time, Carl and I were trying to get pregnant and it like wasn't going well. And we'd been married long enough that it was like, people were really wondering like, so are you ever going to do this? Or are you not going to do this? And if so, I have thoughts. And I mean, like people just get really in your business. And so we all practiced like what we were going to say. And it was so helpful and so cool. And I just will never forget being in that little booth with my family being like, okay. And my dad told me to say, he goes, if someone asks if you guys are trying to get pregnant, what you should say is, my parents never told me how that works. Do you mind letting me know?
Like, your dad said that?
That's so great. How are babies made? Can you please let me know? I think we might be doing something wrong.
So good.
but I think having an answer ahead of time really helps because it makes it so that it's not quite, you're not taken by surprise and you can turn it into a through street.
Gosh, like that. That story is so cool.
Isn't that fun?
Like how fun, first off, realizing that everybody sitting at that table has a question that they're dreading being asked.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just the single people.
Yeah.
It's the people. Mm-hmm. But then to get to actually practice that with your family, that's phenomenal. What a great exercise to do with your roommate, you know, or with a trusted friend or whatever. Like, let's go through it.
Everyone has something. So I know that like you get through that moment and you turn the cul-de-sac into a highway. You say, what I am doing is, you know, insert interesting thing here. But then there's the moment where you like go to the bathroom after dinner and you're sitting there and you're just like looking at yourself in the mirror. And I feel like you do ask yourself that question. Is there something wrong with me? Like, am I behind? And I just like, what do we say? Like, is there something wrong with us for not being... Like, is there something wrong with us?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me give you a prayer. And if prayer is not your language, mantra. let me just give you a saying that has helped me a ton and maybe it will help somebody listening or watching. Less grasping, more laughing. That's it. Those four words. Less grasping, more laughing. Okay, so I've noticed over the years how much I tend to overthink how I'm doing and especially how I'm doing compared to everybody else and how they're doing. And oftentimes that has a lot to do with timeline. You know, that game you play. So often when we ask people how old they are, it's just so we can compare like where we're currently at in comparison to where they're at. And everybody's metric is different. For some people, it's career or work or money or relationship or kids or whatever. We all have our own way of comparing ourselves to the world. I've noticed over the years how often that makes me go through life with closed fists, where it's like I'm trying to grasp onto the world and trying to like make sure that everybody's happy with me and that everybody knows that I'm okay and that everybody knows that I've got this under control. And this idea of going less grasping, more just laughing. Have you ever been in like a really tense situation and then somebody makes a really good joke and it just changes everything?
Yes.
I think that laughter is this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful medication that will help us in the middle of looking in the mirror and asking that question, is there something wrong with me? If you can learn how to let go of a little bit of control that you're trying to keep over your life and go, oh, you know what? Like, I'm fine and we're good and I'm here. And realize like, oh, I'm doing that thing again where I'm grasping too hard onto X, Y, or Z, whatever it is. For me, there's a funny example where I was one night I had just gotten roasted for my singleness, which is nothing new for me. It happens to me all the time. But this was years ago and it really bothered me. And I was at home and I was talking to my friend Jimmy and he was having a bad day because he had just gotten broken up with. And so I'm sitting there and I'm upset. Or he's sitting there, he's upset because he wants to be in a relationship and he's no longer in a relationship. I'm sitting there and I'm upset because I'm not in a relationship and I just want everyone to leave me alone about it. And I start to realize like, oh, Jimmy's grasping too hard to this idea of being in a relationship, but I'm grasping on way too hard to this idea of being single. And so we're actually both doing the same thing. And what if we could both just go, oh, like, we're okay. We're going to be okay. And if we can learn to actually just laugh about these things that we're feeling and laugh about our own insecurities and laugh about the fact that we don't have it all figured out yet in the couple of decades that we've had to be on this earth. Like, life really is a joke at some level. And when you can learn to just laugh about it and laugh along with other people about it, it really does. It helps change that narrative in your mind that there's something wrong with you to look at me doing the best I can with what I've been given right here and right now. I'm going to go back into that family room, sit down at that kitchen table and just be present today and just do my best to love everybody that's around me, but I'm not going to worry so much about whether or not I'm falling behind. Less grasping, more laughing.
I really like that. Anne Lamott says that laughter is carbonated holiness, and that might be my favorite quote ever.
Whoa.
Isn't that so good?
I know we got to keep moving, but that we got to sit with that for a second. Laughter. Carbonated holiness.
Carbonated holiness. Anne Lamott.
Oh.
So good.
That's
out of all the awesome things that, you know, we've talked about singleness and hard things a lot on this show, and I feel like laughter is like has never been the prescription. Like that's such a unique, it's such a unique prescription, and it's such a good one. Like to just take it a little, like, yeah, just take a deep breath. Like we're gonna be okay. We're gonna be okay. And even if like we're talking about things that are really hard and really serious and really, you know, deep, I think even if it's just like, hey, we just don't need to figure this out right now. Like we just, like, this does not need to be fixed right here in this bathroom. We can, we can tackle this tomorrow. We're going to be okay.
We're going to be okay. And an invitation to realize that it's a lot less about fixing these things and more about just realizing like, okay, I think life is just hard. and I think sometimes we're just like dealt tough hands and are going to have tough days. And I love how you said that because like what neither of us are saying is that laughter is going to fix it all. Because it really doesn't. It reminds you that at some deeper level than that current situation that you're going through, that you're okay. Mm. And that you're loved. And to learn to just exist from that place of security. To me, I think that's really where I've been trying to get to in my life and learn that lesson 1,000 times in 1,000 different ways. And I'm still learning it today. But man, when you can start to tap into that seeing laughter as a doorway into realizing that beneath everything that's going on, there's an invitation just to be still and be present and trust that you're okay and that you're going to be okay. That's a really beautiful place to start to get to.
One of the things that I think, I'm just anxious to hear you talk about this is you said, I'm loved. And I think that like for some of us, and like I totally had times like this, like I feel like I'm not. Like I feel like the fact that no one sees me, that no one is pursuing me, that no one like wants me, like that I'm not wantable. I'm not loved. Mm. And so I just like talk to me about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first, that's every human ever. You know, it's funny. We like sometimes we idolize celebrities, or we want to get to that point because what we see of them is that they have millions of people telling them that they love them. And anytime I've had a chance to interact with anybody who's at that point, they always just say the same thing. Like, yeah, no. Oftentimes at the end of the day, I wonder if anybody really sees me, you know, if anybody really loves me. And so like, my goodness, that is like really one of the deepest human questions that we're all asking. Am I loved? Am I valued? Am I worthy? For me, like as a pastor, that comes, that the starting point for that is realizing that God is love, and learning to step into realizing that that isn't, for me, the way I get that off is I feel like I have to accomplish all these things in order to get to that point, in order for God to be like, yeah, well done, now I love you. Realizing that right from the jump, God goes, this is my son, you're listen to this, this is my daughter, like with whom I am well pleased, you are loved just as you are. I don't mean for that to sound like cold comfort to the person listening to this, feeling very isolated, feeling alone, feeling unloved. But I do mean it to be comfort. God says, I am Emmanuel, I'm God with you, and that I love you, and that I have a plan for your life, and that I'm closer than the very oxygen that you're breathing. For me, I've noticed that that's incredibly helpful. I think that there's an extra grace on single people. I think that there's an extra opportunity for us to experience that love of God, in a unique way. And by the way, there's an extra grace on married people in a different way to experience that grace together, and on parents and all of that. But for single people, especially if you feel like, man, this just keeps, I keep trying and it just doesn't seem to be happening. Like one, I know how you feel. And two, I would say in that moment, you are loved. And that God is never far away, and know that we all struggle with these same thoughts and these same lies all the time. Am I worthy? Am I enough? I'm convinced that at the end of all this, we'll look at each other like, why was it so hard for us to actually believe that we were loved this entire time? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I would start there. Does that resonate at all?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's one of those things that like doesn't change, you know, that's like, I'm so grateful that I didn't expect marriage to fix that question of, am I worthy of love? Like, I spent a lot of time really digging into that with God and in therapy and, you know, in my journals and with friends and in all the places, because I had this feeling that like, I don't think marriage is going to fix this. And it doesn't. Like, it totally doesn't. I think I'm convinced that when you don't know, when you can't believe that you're loved, like no amount of people heaping love on you, it just goes straight through you. It doesn't stick. And it's so frustrating when it doesn't stick, but it's that stuff that you got to do on your own. It just doesn't come from a relationship.
Yeah. Yes. That's it. That's so well said. And that's where I think I kept coming back to this word today as I was doing this whole project, because so many of these questions that we're asking, they're so deep and they're so heavy. And what I just realized is so much of them have to do with the past, and so many of them have to do with the future. I can't seem to meet anyone. I can't seem to get in a relationship. What does this mean for my future? And really what the book is inviting people into, but it's just birthed out of me trying to live this way again, is this invitation into radically accepting today. Mm-hmm. And going, okay, what if it was just today? What if it was just in this moment? It becomes a whole lot easier for me to go, oh, like I actually do have people in my life who love me. I actually do have friends who text me, who are asking me questions. I do have that one person who keeps wanting to check in and get Jamba Juice with me, and I have no idea why. Like, there are people in my life who love me. Oftentimes when we get so flustered by the future and the past, it gets so murky. Today is really this invitation to let all of that settle down a little bit and be still. I love Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. Like, be still today, be here now. And the more that we can learn to do that, especially as single people, it helps us combat that question, how are you still single? Because you stop worrying so much about the future and the past, and you just start being present today.
Do you know, one of the things I think is hardest, other than the questions and the how are you still single and Thanksgiving and things like that about being single is that it can be lonely. And it can be, when we think of the word single, it feels like that's the opposite of like connected and tucked in and surrounded and, you know, family. And it doesn't have to be that way though, right?
Totally. Yeah. The line for me is like, be single together. You may be single, but you're not alone. Community to me is everything. So I'm spoiled. I know that I'm spoiled that I have really, really good community. I have a lot of really, really good friends in my life who care about me deeply, who invite me into their lives and their family life and their kids' lives. But I've also worked really hard to get there. It's not something that like your next best friend's not just going to come knock on your door with like a resume for like, here's why I should be your best friend. Maybe that'll happen for somebody. For people like me, that doesn't happen, right? You have to actually go out and be proactive, and it's hard and it's scary, and sometimes it doesn't work, and then you feel uncomfortable and then you want to give up on it. Whoever's listening to this, don't give up on community. Don't give up on having people in your corner who you're sharing meals with and you're texting and you're just celebrating the highs with and crying during the lows. I have a person who I call just when something really good happens and we celebrate it. And he calls me when something really good happens in his life and we celebrate it. Stuff like that's so important. Yeah, singleness doesn't have to be synonymous with being alone. You just have to work a little extra hard to get those people in your corner. Surround yourself with good community.
There are, I love that.